Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Happy Monday. Hope everyone had a wonderful weekend. We've got two big coaching moves made today for Washington State and Washington, with Kyle Smith on the move to Stanford, UW finding their new head coach, Danny Sprinkle. We're going to get to both of those stories in 15 minutes. We also have an interview with Utah State play-by-play man, Scott Gerard. He's going to join us at noon. We're going to get to know a bit more about Danny Sprinkle. So before we get to any of that, Bump, how was your weekend?
How was my weekend? It was actually pretty good. My company put on a tournament this weekend in Monroe. It was dope. My middle school team took the championship. Went to go see my daughter play in Issaquah, then had to jet over to Redmond to see my son play. Catching up on all the games. And, other than Kyle Smith leaving, which we'll dive into, it was a good weekend. But we felt like we knew that was coming with Kyle Smith, right?
Yeah.
It was inevitable. He did his thing. He deserves every opportunity. But it was a good weekend. I can't complain. How was yours?
Mine was good. You're going to hate me given that you were jetting all over the place to your kids' games, but I slept in real late both days. Felt great. Derek and I went to a sports bar to watch the games yesterday, a couple of them, and that was really fun, minus that there was an NC State fan. We went there during Oakland and NC State, who was losing her mind. And I don't just mean like, oh, man, that's a great shot, I'm cheering. I mean every field goal. Every shot, and then every missed shot for Oakland, she was booing and like calling them out.
Passionate.
And I was like, hey man, there are a lot of shots and missed shots in basketball games, and this is gonna get old fast. And man, it did. But overall, I had a great weekend, and it's March Madness is always a wonderful time. The pain is that in our work pool, my bracket is in first place, but it's simultaneously impossible for me to win because I took Kentucky to the final.
Impossible.
So it's like a lie. You know what I mean? Tay's back here smiling because he's probably going to win. All right. Well, we are not talking March Madness just yet, though we will later in the show kind of recap some of the big stories to come from the first weekend. Instead, we're going to talk about quarterbacks, Seahawks quarterbacks. Seattle's kind of sending mixed messages with their quarterback situation. And isn't it that time of the year that everyone does? So first, from Tom Pelissero. He said, does Mike McDonald expect a quarterback competition? Quote, this is McDonald, I don't. I've talked to Geno about it. Very confident in Geno. Geno's going to be our starter. Sam knows he's going to be our backup, but Sam is a great young player, and he's got a really bright future that we believe in. Simultaneously, though, they're also doing their due diligence. From Albert Breer, ahead of this Friday's Pro Day, Michigan quarterback J.J. McCarthy had lengthy meetings Thursday in Ann Arbor with three teams. The Patriots, number 3 overall, the Commanders, number 2 overall, and the Seahawks. Mike McDonald was with McCarthy at Michigan in 2021. What do you make of that story?
I look at this story and I go, all right, Geno is our dude. Until he's not our dude, I'm going to ride with that. But he's also 34, and you also have a young quarterback in Sam Howell who you're still trying to figure out. I think they believe Sam Howell has a lot of potential, but you don't know what you don't know. What you do know is that if Geno doesn't work out and Sam Howell is just a guy that you saw last year, you're going to want another quarterback. So what do? You travel the country. You see J.J. McCarthy. You speak to other players. I believe they're allowed, 30 visits to their facility? I guarantee you there's going to be other quarterbacks that visit the facility. You're always trying to make sure you're okay. Unless you have Tom Brady on your roster, Pat Mahomes, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Tua, Justin Herbert, you're constantly looking for the next guy because you never know how far the guy that you have under center is going to take you. There are some teams that you can go out and say he ain't gonna win a Super Bowl for you, and maybe you look at Geno that way. I look at Geno as a guy who can push you towards that direction, and you never really know what could happen. So what do I make of it? I make of it as an organization that's doing what they're supposed to do, because you do not have a future Hall of Famer at the quarterback position. Every organization is going to look at quarterbacks. It's just how seriously are you looking at these quarterbacks?
Right. I think that that's the right way to look at it, is like everyone has to do your due diligence. There's also that natural connection between McCarthy and obviously Mike McDonald, given his time at Michigan, given how well he knows him. I mean, this to me isn't drastically different from when John Schneider was going to Pro Days for Josh Allen, or when there was rumors that they were very interested in Pat Mahomes. The notable difference, and it is notable, being that this time they have a first-round pick, middle of the first round. Now, you think, and many others do, that J.J. McCarthy is going to go long before then. He could be the number 3-4 pick off the board, right?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think he'll last to 16. And there are teams right in front of the Seahawks who you feel need a quarterback. I've been saying it for 2 weeks now with the Vikings, the Broncos, the Raiders. I think the Saints are behind. I think they're in front of the Seahawks as well. There are too many QB-needing teams that are in front of them. So I don't think it's going to happen unless some trades happen. This is flip-flopped. You never really know. But like my what's my bracket say? I picked 82% of the games right. I'm 82% sure that J.J. McCarthy is not going to be there. But you never really know. There's no crystal ball telling you that the Arizona Cardinals aren't going to get Marvin Harrison. They're right. going to go get a quarterback. We can bank on them not getting a quarterback, but you never really know. In four down territory, I'm going to talk about the Patriots and the Commanders and their situation. All this is posturing that we're seeing before the draft. There's a lot of fake news being thrown out there, and there's some that's real and some that's going to stick. Because you don't know, you got to prepare for every single situation. That's what I see the Seahawks doing. Right. If JJ is available at 16, of course I can see them picking him up.
I can too, because I don't think at this point anyone expects him to actually fall to 16. Exactly for the reason you said, because of the quarterback needy teams ahead of him, with Sean Payton earlier today saying that the Broncos, you know, it's not impossible that they could trade up to take, you know, a really high pick. I think that what this is just a reflection of where the Seahawks quarterback situation is right now. The Chiefs are not doing their due diligence on quarterbacks in the draft. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there are some teams around the league. The Chargers are not doing their due diligence on quarterbacks in the draft. But that is just a fraction of teams in the league. Seattle is in a different pool. You've talked about it a million times. It's a different tier where you got a guy who can help you win games, but can he get you to a Super Bowl? Now, Bump, technically this is a conversation we're having at 10:30, so I don't want to spoil it and jump ahead, but this is a place Seattle's going to be until they have that answer definitively, and that answer's hard to find.
It's the hardest thing to find, in my opinion, in football, is your franchise quarterback, the guy who season ticket holders can rely on every single weekend to put them in positions to win ball games. Because if you're not putting your team in position to win ball games, you are not a franchise type of guy. Only about 6 or 7 of those guys in the league right now. This is part of the process, the circle of life when it comes to the NFL. Now, every other position, linebacker, receiver, defensive line, linebacker, safeties, you have backups that are going to play. Guarantee these guys are going to play. Bobby Wagner might have played 98% of the snaps, but he didn't play 100. Look at the offensive line. Even when these guys were healthy, Abe Lucas and Charles Cross didn't play every single snap. Guys are going to play on the roster if you are a number two. Not at the quarterback spot. We went 10, 11 years without seeing Russell Wilson take a snap off, unless we're talking about taking a knee at the end of the game, which Geno would come in and do that. Quarterback, you expect him to be out there 100% of the time if he's winning ball games for you. So you got to you're constantly looking for that guy. Every other position, you're going to draft. The Hawks will draft a running back, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. They're going to look at offensive linemen, even though I feel like they're in a good place. They're for sure going to look at linebacker. Every other position is going to be addressed in this draft, guaranteed. If you are a team with a Pat Mahomes, you're not really looking at the quarterback spot. You need a backup. You need a guy to come in and keep the offense rolling. If you're a Pat Mahomes, a Lamar, or Josh Allen, typically you get a veteran quarterback to do that for you. You're not trying to develop a young guy, not quite, until you reach the end of that quarterback's life expectancy in the NFL. Some guys are longer. Aaron Rodgers, 40 years old, his is longer. Tom Brady, 45, he's longer. I think Geno, people are looking at Geno now and saying, all right, he's probably towards the end of this thing, even though he just got started. And the end could be 3 to 5 years, which, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
But you got to start preparing, because what you've seen in the past of Geno doesn't put him in the top tier when it comes to quarterbacks. Does not mean he's not a solid quarterback in his league, but there are levels to this.
Also, I don't think Mike McDonald is lying. Like, they could draft a quarterback, which, again, I don't think they will, because neither you nor I think J.J. McCarthy will be there at 16. The Seahawks don't have all of the capital they probably need or want to trade up, given all the other holes that they have to fill on this roster. I think they're going to stand pat at 16, and J.J. won't be there. End of discussion. They'll take a, you know, a tackle or, you know, whatever, or trade back. But that being said, in this 2% world where they take a quarterback because someone's actually there that they want, I think Geno's still your starter. And honestly, this is a different conversation about, like, how you acclimate young quarterbacks to the league. think of how many good examples you can think of young quarterbacks who adapted well to the league because they had this really strong support system around them, because their coaches and team understood their strengths, but also because they got to ramp up. They weren't thrown into a bad situation. I mean, you've got Rodgers, you've got Pat Mahomes, you've got a million examples where you can say that's how it should be done. I think Geno is still your starter in 2024.
Yeah, it definitely is. Unless something catastrophic happens, knock on wood, I hope it doesn't. He's the guy. And why is he the guy? Because he's put together two solid seasons. I think people confuse sometimes our enthusiasm for Geno as, you know, we see him as a top-tier guy. It's hard to be a top-tier guy. Just because you're not a top-tier guy doesn't mean you're not a damn good football player in this league. Mm-hmm. It just means they're the elite of the elites. And what we do, there are guys getting paid millions of dollars to do what we do. They're just at a different tier. I mean, you were striving to get there, right? We'd love to get there. We're working on it. But there are things you have to do to reach that. And I think Geno's situation for that gap of 6-7 years where he wasn't the guy, it kind of – slow down his progression a little bit. Who knows? If Geno would have came in the league, was at with a better organization, and maybe was mentally in a different place, mm-hmm. didn't get into the things he got into, who knows what his development would be like. But because he plays quarterback, if you don't produce within the next couple of years or the first 2 to 3 years, then you're automatically pushed down into tier two, and it's so hard to climb yourself up out of there. But I like what you said about these quarterbacks. They have to be supported, and they have to be developed. Rarely do you get a C.J. Stroud who hits the scene running and does his thing, but he was supported. You got DeMeco Ryans over there changing the game. They went and had an incredible draft last year, flipping picks and adding Will Anderson, and then you see what they're doing now. That's how you support a young quarterback. We've seen so many times where guys get into this league, and it goes, this is your team, go make it happen. You got 2 years, you don't get it done, you're gone, even though you don't have a true number one. You don't have a really good running back. Your defense is suspect. That's just the flaw when it comes to the quarterback position, but it also lets you know just how difficult it is to find your franchise guy when they're not supported mm-hmm. and they have such a short leash.
So part of why this is obviously our opening story is that we want you guys to know the latest on some of that stuff with that Albert Breer report that J.J. McCarthy had a lengthy meeting in Ann Arbor with three teams, one of them being the Seahawks. That broke this morning, so we just wanted to keep you guys up to date about what's going on as the Seahawks go to these pro days, who they're talking to that we're hearing of, who some of those longer meetings are with. Mm-hmm. And again, what's it mean? Well, you heard Bump. They're doing their due diligence. And so that's why we're here. Here's the news. Here's what's happening. Here's what we think it means. But let's keep an eye on it.
Yeah. Keep watching.
Keep an eye on this one. Mm-hmm. This is an interesting story. We're going to be tracking it. And obviously, it's the most important position in all of football. One of the most important positions in all of sports. Someone did send in on the Mac and Jack's text line a really interesting question. I'm going to save it, though. So there was a listener. We talked about, hey, there's maybe 6, 7, 8, 9 teams that don't have these big monumental questions about their quarterback, right? Because we were saying Seattle isn't in the minority here. Like, there are a lot of teams that are like, do we have the guy?
There's a bunch of them.
Yeah. The 209 texting in from Cali says, so there are only 6 to 7 teams with a chance to win the Super Bowl, and you have to have one of the 6 to 7 top quarterbacks. It's a good question, because the bigger part of this question is, well, how do you win a Super Bowl? Here's what I'm going to do, Texter. I'm saving this one because we're going to have a very similar conversation coming up here at 10:30 with some really fascinating sound from Joel Klatt on whether or not he thinks the Seahawks can win a Super Bowl with Geno or Sam. So your question is a good one. I'm hanging on to it. We're going to get to it in 15 minutes. Right now, what we're going to do, though, is get to headline rewrites. Let's go.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacey.
Coaching carousel in this state's been out of control today. Just 2 days after the Cougs were eliminated from the NCAA tournament, Stanford has announced Kyle Smith as their next head basketball coach. What's the real headline?
Look, Coug fans might not be ready to hear this one, but can you blame Kyle Smith?
No, we're ready to hear, because unlike UW, we live in reality. We
understand. I don't want to live in reality.
We understand what WSU
it's
is.
Not nice there.
WSU is a place where you can strike gold every now and then. And if you do, if you put together a good group, whether that be in basketball, baseball, or football, there's a very high chance your coach is going to leave. Now, you look at this situation and your heart could be broken, and I get you, I understand you, but understand that WSU tried to put a retention package together, $2.5 million. Then you look at the living situation and say, why would he want to live in the Bay when it's so cheap to live in Pullman? Because Stanford provides housing for their coaches. And then if you know Kyle Smith's story, he has a son with autism, and Stanford does a great job with their facilities of supporting that situation. It makes sense for him and his family. So what we should do is thank Coach for his time over here at WSU, getting us to the tournament for the first time since 2008 when I was in college, and putting us on the map. We're going to take a few steps back now because that's what we do. Have a few good years, take a few steps back, try to get a group together. But thank you, Kyle Smith. I understand. UW, it's okay. Y'all got a coach. We're going to talk about him too. But it's just, this is reality.
Well, and your impression is also, it sounds like that Wazoo did what they could. That this is just, your point about reality is funny. Obviously, everyone loves to dig at rival schools, but you're right. The reality is that this, given the circumstances around what both of these schools could provide, was kind of the inevitable decision.
Mm-hmm.
And it always is a bummer when reality doesn't go in your favor, right? Yeah. That's how I feel about Kalen DeBoer. And I hate that he left Washington, but I also think, but it's for Bama and it's for more money. And Bama's in a different place than my alma mater. And I just had to accept that. By the way, Kyle Smith did release a statement. It's really long. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'll read you the first part and then the end, in which he ends with an emotional message for Cougs fans. He said, "It is with a humble heart that I want people to know I've decided to take on a new challenge." So confirming the story, obviously. "It's been an honor to lead the Coug basketball program back to the NCAA tournament. This has not been a one-year run, but a slow buildup of sustained success and growth year over year." He thanks leadership at the top, including Pat Chun and Kirk Schultz. This is his final statement, which I think is probably what he really wants to stick with fans. "I know some or many may not understand my decision, but I want everyone to know how appreciative me and my family are and always will be. We've been loved unconditionally in this community, and we will always be grateful. I often talk about how my why is to empower people to empower themselves. Washington State empowered me to fulfill my dreams. It's time for someone else to have this opportunity. Once a Coug, always a Coug."
Yeah, we appreciate you, Coach. You'll be a Coug again once you're done at Stanford, though. For now, you know, you a Coug. We got love for you. What you wearing?
But right now, you're a tree.
You know, you're a tree right now. But we love you, man. We appreciate you, Coach.
Yeah.
Headline rewrites.
The Huskies are reportedly hiring former Montana State and Utah State head basketball coach Danny Sprinkle. What's the real headline?
This is not my best work, but I'm kind of proud of it. The name's Sprinkle, but he doesn't plan to turn UW into a cupcake.
Okay.
You know what? It's not bad. Yeah. It's not bad. I couldn't let the last name. Matt is losing it because it's awful. Matt looks like he's crying right now. Is it because it's so bad?
It's the worst thing you've ever said, and I love it.
I couldn't let the last name Sprinkle just sit there.
A lot of possibilities for puns with that last
exactly,
name.
Exactly. Sprinkle led Utah State to their first outright Mountain West title and their first NCAA tourney win since 2001. That was in his only season this past year with the Aggies.
Y'all probably don't know, but this reminds me of E-40, Sprinkle Me, that song. Sprinkle Me, man. They need to play that. When he addresses the student body, play E-40, Sprinkle. But good for this guy. He's climbed to the top quickly. Over there at Montana State, regular season champions, once won the tournament twice, the conference tournament twice, got them to the NCAA, the March Madness dance, whatever you want to call it. This is a good move, man. This young man is 46, 47 years old. He's been on the rise, and good for him. I feel good about this for UW. I feel like this is a guy who understands what college basketball is, where it's going, and just how to win. So I'm encouraged for UW fans because y'all been on your boy hop for a long time now.
I on Friday when I was out because I was doing a career day at an elementary school, I sent you and Curtis recaps, voice messages of the funny moments. I completely forgot one of them until you said that. So they're little kids. No one's older than sixth grade. And so you go in and you're like, well, here's what I did in college. And here's what led me to being, then a sports reporter. And then now I'm on air talking sports, but they're kids. So they're, have you ever met DK Metcalf? Those are their questions. Yeah. And they're adorable. That's really all they care about. And so I was answering questions, and most of the questions were just who have you interviewed? And all of them are sports people. And then one kid in Bump this is like a fourth or fifth grader, goes, have you ever interviewed E-40?
Really?
I swear to God. And I was like, I turned to the teacher with like, how does he know?
Hey,
how does he know
parents.
Who E-40 is?
That's
right.
All his parents
exactly.
Right there. All right.
Yeah, that's good parenting.
Yeah, great parenting.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, Shohei Ohtani is expected to address the allegations of theft and illegal sports gambling against his ex-interpreter later today. What's the real headline?
Look, if I had to answer really tough, awkward questions, doing it without my interpreter would be a perfect time.
Perfect time. I'm not going to blast my relative because I love her, but my wife is half Mexican, half Salvadoran, and there's a relative in our family. When she don't want to have no conversation, she'd be like, I don't understand. That's what Ohtani will be
like, but you speak perfect.
I don't know what you're talking about. Hold on, we were just talking 5 minutes ago. I don't understand. That's going to be Ohtani when there's a question
so
he don't
sorry,
want to answer.
Sorry, I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
How do you say, I don't understand.
What? Here's the thing about, actually, Curtis, can you ask the question on air that you asked us in the sports bit? I thought it was a good one. About what are you more excited to?
Oh, what are you more excited to find out about? Ohtani's answers today or that Washington Post report on LSU head coach Kim Mulkey?
Bump.
It's juicy. Both of them are juicy. I think we'll get more out of Mrs. LSU, that situation, but it's Ohtani for me. I'm at soccer games, and dads are just walking up to me, big eyes, Ohtani? Ohtani? That's how you know it's a big deal. No. I'm like, hold on, my daughter's on the field right now. Let me concentrate.
I was doing the exact, so my boyfriend is, he grew up liking basketball especially, but like he's not a diehard sports fan now. So most of the time he just kind of humors me or whatever. And he and I were talking about the Ohtani situation when it first came out. And he was like, I got to be honest, like, I don't know why this is that big of a deal. Like, he wasn't betting. He wasn't the one gambling. Like, I think people are just making it a big story. And I was like, yeah, I can totally, yeah, like, I almost agree with you. Mm-hmm. Like, I can kind of see that point. And then he's doing the same thing now where he sent me like a tweet the other day that was like, well, what if it was betting on games? Now he's got all these questions. Yeah. Like it's a story that sucks you in, even mm-hmm. if you are like a casual sports fan or you don't entirely know. And the problem is we will not have answers to any of those questions today. Like this is, I don't think there will be anything to come from this press conference. Do you?
No, I don't think so. What I did with, the parents that I spoke to or even my son, I tried to lay out every possible scenario I can think of what it could be. And I go, look, this is all speculation. We don't really know, but these are the five things that I see that could be possible in this situation.
Yeah.
And that's all we have to work with at this point. And I doubt that it's extremely clear until months from now when the MLB does their investigation. Even then, there's a possibility where they're going to sweep some stuff under the rug because Ohtani is the face of the sport right now. So they got to take care of their brand, and I think they'll do their best to take care of Ohtani. But my belief is, he knew something was going down. He went oblivious to the whole situation.
You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. One expert answers whether the Seahawks can win a Super Bowl with Geno. That's next.
Bump and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Rost.
We were having a conversation about the Seahawks going to visit J.J. McCarthy at his pro day. They were one of three teams to have extended interviews with him. And someone texted in, Bump, to the Mac and Jack's text line. So wait, there are like 6 to 7 teams with a chance to win a Super Bowl because you have to have one of the top quarterbacks? Because we said, look, maybe a handful plus of teams aren't worried about who their quarterback is or wondering what they need to do. So let's have a bigger conversation because an expert, Joel Klatt, was on with Brock and Salk this morning, and they were initially talking about the draft and free agency and all this stuff. And then they turned to quarterbacks, specifically the two that Seattle have. And first, they asked Joel Klatt about Sam Howell. Here's what he said.
You know, at some point, you got to close your eyes and picture the confetti falling and think to yourself, like, is that the type of guy that I could see, you know, with a Lombardi trophy in his right hand? And unfortunately, I just don't see that with Sam Howell. That doesn't mean he can't be a good NFL starter, but you know, are we just trying to be wild cards here, or are we trying to go and actually like win a Super Bowl? I know that that's a high bar and that seems critical, but you know, Sam Howell is a fine NFL player. If he's your quarterback, I don't think you're trying to win the Super Bowl.
So then, Bump, the natural follow-up becomes, Well, that was a conversation about Sam. What's he think about their actual starter, Geno?
Yes, exactly.
He was asked, would you say the same thing about Geno?
Exactly, verbatim.
Yeah, so kind of the same
Seahawks
thing.
The Seahawks are not a Super Bowl contender right now. They're just not. And because they don't have the requisite quarterback play to do that. They just don't. And it's one thing you could say, like, well, Joel Russell wasn't that when they won the Super Bowl. And to some extent, yes, that's true. But also, think of how cheap Russell was and the roster that they had around him. Think of how dominant the Denver defense was in Super Bowl 50 and the roster they had around an aging Peyton Manning. Okay, Seattle doesn't have that right now. They don't have the roster around an average quarterback to say to themselves, yeah, absolutely, we can go and compete with San Francisco. You're not even the best team in your own division.
So much to take from this. I'll start with just the general Geno conversation. Can the Seahawks win a Super Bowl with Geno?
Anything is possible.
Okay,
but
Kevin.
If you're looking at the history of the Super Bowl and what quarterbacks win the Super Bowl, I'm looking at the list right now. The only names that I see up here where I go, well, he's not a Hall of Fame type of quarterback, is Curtis's Nick Foles. Mm-hmm. And then I can go down to Brad Johnson, Trent Dilfer. What was Trent Dilfer surrounded with?
One of the best defenses of all time.
Brad Johnson had himself a hell of a defense. Nick Foles slid into the mix and washed all season or for like 14 games and was like, all right, this is what I need to do to win. Everything is already set up. They had personnel around him. Mm-hmm. Now you flip over, you look at the losing quarterbacks. Jimmy Garoppolo, not a Hall of Famer. Colin Kaepernick, not a Hall of Famer. Rex Grossman, not a Hall of Famer. Matt Hasselbeck, no disrespect for Matt, my guy, big love. Rich Gannon, Jake Delhomme. You can get to the Super Bowl without having that quarterback. But even if you get there, you got to be surrounded by pieces. Jake Delhomme had one of the best running games in the league. Donovan McNabb had weapons everywhere. Is he a Hall of Famer? I'm not sure. Matt Hasselbeck had a great offensive line and a beautiful run game. Rex Grossman had the greatest returner in all the game over there. You can get to that point, but talent and quarterback play is going to win that. So when you look at the Seattle Seahawks, I see a roster that is being reconstructed. We don't know what Jerome Baker is going to do. We don't know what Dotson is going to do. Offensively, how good is your offensive line? I think they're moving in the right direction. I think they still need to draft on that offensive line. What's that offensive line going to do? If you look at the teams who've won the Super Bowl and the teams that have competed in the Super Bowl, and then you throw this roster of Seahawks in there, you would say, nah, this team can't compete with them right now. But this is right now in March. You still got the draft. Mm-hmm. You still got the summer. And you got to play the season. Who knows what this team can develop to. But right now, I don't think we're talking Super Bowl with this team. We're talking compete in the division. Because the Rams are going to be good. And the Niners are going to be good. And who knows what the Cardinals are going to look like. Because Kyler Murray had them dudes playing late in the season. So I think it's fair. I don't think it's disrespect towards anybody over there in that organization. I think it's fair to say, look, right now, this team, they're not contenders. Just focus on the division right now because the rosters over the past 20 years of guys who've won and who've lost look a lot better than the roster that the Hawks have right now.
Yeah, I think that ultimately this becomes a question of how do you win a Super Bowl? And it's maybe my favorite question to ask about sports is how do you build a championship team? Because whether it's, you know, it's a conversation we're going to be having about baseball as the season gets started here. It's a conversation you and I have had many times about the Seahawks. Teams have taken different approaches. Now, there are patterns. You want to be great in the trenches, right? You're not going to see the worst offensive line in football leading you to a Super Bowl. You got to have, you know, at least a couple stars. You got to be healthy. You know, you have to make some good moves ahead of that. Like, you can see patterns and you can see similarities. But otherwise, I like that he mentions, as an example, 2012-13 Russell Wilson, or excuse me, 13 going into 14 Russell Wilson, because he's right. I think that Russ was better than people give him credit for in hindsight. But this team was so complete. It's maybe the best offensive line they'd ever had still. Great receivers, incredibly underrated receivers. A 1,000-yard running back. So there was a ton on offense, mm-hmm. in addition to, obviously, the Legion of Boom. And I think that there's a world where a quarterback like Geno you can get to a Super Bowl with, but Seattle doesn't have the rest of those pieces. So then when we talk about what you do at 16, that's why I naturally go to not a quarterback, because I just think like, God, build up that team, get those pieces, you know, like find those things that you need to be a more complete roster. Because, yeah, like you may not have, you know, the long term answer at quarterback. You may not have your version of your franchise guy, but that guy also can't do it on his own.
He's got to be supported.
You
gotta,
even on great teams.
Yeah, you must be supported. Football is the only sport that I would think of out of the four major sports in this country where no matter how good your quarterback is, your guy you're paying $40 million, right? He cannot take over the game all by himself. He can take over his side of the ball and score every time he has the ball in his hands and put together these drives, but you're going to need to stop. You're going to need your special team guys to fly down and kick off, fill their lanes and tackle to make sure there are no big punt returns. Because there's an offense, defense, and special teams, you have to be supported. In other sports, in hockey, let Connor McDavid score a bunch of these points. He can score goals. He can get assists, get a bunch of minutes on the ice. You look at baseball. Obviously, I think baseball, you need a team as well. You need a good pitching staff, but a guy can get up there and produce four runs with just one swing. It's so much more difficult in football to take over a game. You need to be supported no matter how good your quarterbacks are. If that was the case, Tom Brady should have won 13 then, because he was the best quarterback in this game for 10 to 15 years. It's not that simple. So I don't think it's any type of shade, man. Again, can we live in reality? That's all we're doing. No disrespect to the Hawks or what they're doing over there. There's still an opportunity for them, but I don't think they're contenders right now.
I'm going to keep this conversation moving into 10:45. You and I are just going to move it forward to, okay, well, if Joel Klatt says the Seahawks aren't a Super Bowl team, how many pieces away are they? Like, what makes them a Super Bowl team? So that's what we're going to talk about next. And then, yes, we're a couple days away from opening day. I can't believe it's already here for the Mariners. So ESPN's Jesse Rogers joining us at the top of the hour at 11. Stay tuned. We are getting to Mariners in just a little bit. Don't go anywhere.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Talking baseball in 15 minutes. ESPN's Jesse Rogers is going to join us before we get to it. Joel Klatt was on with Brock and Salk this morning, and he says the Hawks aren't a Super Bowl team. Try not to have your feelings hurt, right? He's got to have some tough love for you guys, for us. So how do they become one? If you agree with it, then how do you become one? Let's first spend maybe like a minute. What makes a Super Bowl team? I said good in the trenches, efficient offense. What do you think?
I mean, all the above. There are different ways to win a Super Bowl.
Yes.
The Broncos with Peyton Manning won a Super Bowl, one of the most prolific offenses we've seen up to that day. The Baltimore Ravens back in the Trent Dilfer, even Joe Flacco days, won those Super Bowls because that offense was on point. The Kansas City Chiefs this year won the Super Bowl partly because of their defense, but as they got into the playoffs, they became more balanced and Pat Mahomes started to do his thing. There are many ways to win a Super Bowl, but there are some things to be true. You got to be elite on one side of the football.
Yeah.
One side of the football needs to be, we are one of the best in the game when it comes to this. This side of the football is always going to give us a chance, even if the other side ain't doing this thing. I look at the Kansas City Chiefs this year, but I go, during the season, it was that way. Defense holding down the offense. Once you got in, now the $50 million man said, all right, guys, I got you. You guys got us here. I got you. Defense has continued to be on point. But it starts with personnel. You can have some bad coaches, some guys who aren't qualified for the position, or some guys who aren't innovative, who don't really captivate a team, and the talent is going to take over. Because when you have a guy like Ray Lewis on your defense, who's going to hold guys accountable, who's going to work hard, and everyone's going to match his energy, I would imagine the DC over there is doing his thing. He's studying film, but he's saying there's a lot of stuff I ain't got to do because Ray and the Goose and Sam Adams and everyone else who's involved in that are going to make sure guys are on point. So it takes the right combination. You know, it's like making macaroni and cheese.
Oh.
In my family, if your mac and cheese is whack, we taking our last name back. All right? Bars.
Fair.
Your mac and cheese got to be on point. My grandma got some bomb mac and cheese. My mom got some bomb mac and cheese. My auntie Shirley got some bomb mac and cheese. And my wifey stepped into the cookout, and she's throwing hands with her mac and cheese. Big ups to you, babe. Good job.
She stepped up to the plate. She hit it out of the park.
Hit it out the park. But they're all different. They're all different mac and cheese. Don't mean it ain't bomb. So I think that's what it is with these Super Bowl teams that you're building. But there's one thing to be true that is the most true is that you need a Hall of Fame type quarterback if to give yourself the best chance, and he has to be supported.
And
though.
Bump already earlier said you don't need that guy to win, pointing to a couple teams that didn't. But it also supports the exact thing that you said also, then be elite somewhere. Mm-hmm. Like we talked about the Ravens, 2000 Ravens having an elite defense. The 2015 Denver Broncos with Peyton Manning won with an elite defense. Von Miller was MVP of that Super Bowl. They completely shut down a really great Carolina offense and seemingly an unstoppable quarterback. Obviously, Seattle and for their 2013 Super Bowl won on the backs of like a great elite historic defense. Also being a complete team, like you can't be too lopsided, like being a complete team. Okay, let's move it forward. What do the Seahawks have? And what are they missing?
What they have are, I believe, two elite corners. Yes, our guy Reek Woolen had himself a down year when you look at his rookie season. I get that. But I believe he's going to bounce back this year. It wasn't even a horrible year. It just didn't match up to what he did last year. People are going to point at his tackling. Okay, I get it. And I'm not against you there. I understand all that. But I think they have two elite type corners. Still got to develop. They're young. But we look at Reek and we look at Witherspoon and we feel like the future is bright. Mm-hmm. So that there's a start there. They also have skill positions on offense. I think they have one of the best three receivers or combinations in the league with DK, with Tyler Lockett, and with JSN. I think JSN's next step is going to be a leap. He is going to produce even more. I think that in the backfield, they have two good running backs who can get her done. You got Ken Walker, you got Zach Charbonnet. Their styles complement each other. I look at the skill positions on offense, and I go, that's good enough to kind of start some momentum when it comes to building this team. Defensively, I look at the secondary, the corners specifically, and say, that's a great start right there. Love what they have up the middle with Cat holding down Mr. Leonard Williams. That's what they have. They also have the unknown that keeps us optimistic in Mike McDonald and the rest of that staff, because we don't know what it's going to look like. We don't know how they're going to teach their philosophy and develop these guys. So that's what they have. They have the unknown in the coaching staff that makes me excited, because guys don't really know what's going to happen. You can't look at Baltimore film and try to figure some things out. The first few weeks are going to be a guessing game for the opponents. Like, all right, what are they going to do? How are they going to operate, especially with Grubb on offense as well? So the unknown helps them out. And then the talent at the skill positions. And if you get a healthy Abe and Charles Cross, that helps as well. I still think you need one more piece on that O-line, though.
I agree. And I was just going to say, as far as what they're missing, to me, it's great play in the trenches, great players in the trenches. Like, you don't have Pro Bowlers, career guys, guys that, you know, you absolutely feel like you need in order to win this game. Like, you need a better offensive line, better offensive line play, and this is not in their control, a healthy offensive line, mostly healthy offensive line. Like, you need health and luck there. But to me, having great skill position players and, like, a solid starting quarterback doesn't mean anything if you can't get that offensive line play going.
Yeah. Line's got to go. And also, I missed this part, too. I think they have it on their roster, but obviously they have to produce. They need double-digit sack guy. They need a guy to get 12, 13 sacks, and then you sprinkle in a four and a half here, five here, seven there. They just re-signed DT. DT had a year. We had 9.5 sacks. But you need somebody to get after that dang quarterback and have double digits, preferably 12 or more when it comes to sacks.
That has still not happened since 2018. I think 18, the last year that Jaron Reed and Frank Clark were both on the squad together, when Frank Clark had 14 and Jaron Reed had 10.5, last time any Seahawk had double-digit sacks.
Yeah.
Like, that has been a while, y'all.
It's been a while.
It's been a while. So I think that, you know, you don't need a guy to get 16, 17, 18. You don't need to find Myles Garrett. But you look at what Baltimore had last year with Justin Madubuike having, God, what did he have, like 13, 10, 13, kind of whatever. That's kind of the defense that you're talking about, where also under Mike McDonald, it's like you have a guy that just gets to double digits, but it's okay as long as you're having a lot of guys that can produce, because then you get a good rotation where you are not entirely dependent on that guy. He just happens to be your best pass rusher, but you get guys that can wreak havoc, you know, no matter what.
Yeah, you get a guy on that defensive line or even an edge that is just causing mayhem. They're going to slide the protection that way. They're going to try to double him, and it creates opportunities for other guys. Mm-hmm. I really believe Uchenna can be that dude.
All right, you guys, you're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. We are going to get to a very interesting story in the timeline. Washington Post causing a stir with Kim Mulkey from LSU. Lots of people have been talking about this one. We're also going to get to know new Huskies men's basketball head coach Danny Sprinkle with Scott Gerard, who's play-by-play man for Utah State. That's coming up at noon. Some good stuff with that one. Before we get to it, we are just days away from opening day for the Seattle Mariners. So how far can they get? Bring it on ESPN's Jesse Rogers next.